This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Venezuela's economic crisis appears to have erased nearly two decades of progress on infant mortality. This is the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. As Venezuela's two rival leaders battle for control, the lack of food and medicines and the runaway hyperinflation continues to hurt millions of people. In fact, a new report published in the medical magazine The Lancet says infant mortality rates started to rise in 2009 after a reduction in health funding. Tamara Broner was born in Venezuela and is a senior Americas researcher with Human Rights Watch.
The majority of Venezuelans now have a very hard time finding food, finding medicines, finding the most basic medical supplies. And this generates increasing levels of malnutrition, including in children, and also greater numbers of diseases like malaria and tuberculosis. And we are seeing also surges of diseases such as measles and diphtheria, which had been eradicated from Venezuela. And this is what people are struggling with.
So how is the current political battle affecting the humanitarian situation?
The human rights and humanitarian crisis that Venezuela is facing today is totally unprecedented. And it is having an impact on people's lives. The fact that the government accuses the U.S. government of interference and of imposing sanctions and blaming the U.S. government for its impossibility to import medicines, for example, doesn't stand up to scrutiny. Because when we advocate for sanctions, we're not advocating for sanctions that have a generalized impact on the population. Those, you know, no one wants the Venezuelan people to suffer more than what they're already suffering. The sanctions that we're advocating for are targeted sanctions against key Venezuelan officials, meaning freezing their assets, canceling their visas to travel abroad. And there are several governments, not only in the region, but also the European Union, that have imposed these sanctions. And these sanctions have absolutely no impact on the humanitarian crisis on the ground. What Venezuela needs to do is open its doors to all available humanitarian aid. That is not happening. Humanitarian agencies are not being able to operate to their full extent to help the Venezuelan people.
Tamara Broner there. And oil prices are rising on the possibility of U.S. sanctions on exports of Venezuelan crude. Let's do the numbers. The British pound is set for its best week in a year. That's as Theresa May has reportedly won over the Democratic Unionist Party, which her government depends on for a parliamentary majority to parts of her Brexit deal. Now, trade talks between the U.S. and China to resolve an ongoing trade spat are due to restart in Washington on Wednesday, though the U.S. Commerce Secretary says there's a, quote, fair chance of a deal. Not everyone is expecting a swift resolution. The BBC's Simon Jack spoke to Goldman Sachs' newly installed CEO, David Solomon, at the World Economic Forum in Davos.
China is an up-and-coming economy that has become much bigger, much more important part of global growth. I think this is something that's going to be a part of the economic narrative for a period of time.
It seems to me that the US was very happy when they were designing iPhones in the US, they were assembling them in China. But when you have companies like Huawei, which are emerging as a real force, the US feels a little more uncomfortable about that. And some would say using security concerns as a smokescreen.
I think there have been imbalances in the way the US and China have dealt with each other, particularly the openness that China's had with respect to U.S. business. China's making a big investment in a variety of technology and a variety of products and services. I think in the U.S., we want to see a level playing field.
That sounds like you're quite supportive of the Trump narrative.
I'm supportive of the fact. I think the administration has it right. There needs to be a rebalancing and a movement forward. And I think there's been a change with U.S. business leaders over the course of the last couple of years in recognizing that it's time to make some progress on this. And I think the administration is appropriately focused on those issues. I think if we don't move forward, so we move down a road of higher tariffs, I think that'll have an impact on economic growth.
David Solomon. Now, product placement has been around since the age of silent films, but one movie really catapulted the concept into a money-making industry that exists today. Emily Thomas, host of the BBC's Food Chain, explains E.T.'s revolutionary yet surprisingly simple idea.
The producers of that film went to M&M's and they said, look, can we use your product and we'll put them in the aliens' hands? And M&M's famously just turned them away. The producers then went to the manufacturers of Reese's Pieces and they said, yeah, sure, why not? No money exchanged hands. The company said that they'd do some promotion for the film, but that was that. And just weeks after E.T., sales of Reese's Pieces had doubled. And then the film went on to become a cult hit. And of course, that's the beauty of product placement. If your product is embedded in content, then it exists for as long as the film does.
I have to say, I think I remember that moment of the Reese's Pieces. Now, all of this, though, it's changed over the years, hasn't it?
It has. Food companies are still saturating all our film and TV content. But we do see as the industry matures, product placement does become more subtle. The film critic in Nigeria says a lot of what he sees is very blatant. In Bollywood, where the film industry is a bit older, we're seeing product placement becoming more subtle.
The issue here, though, is about health too, isn't it? Because the food that tends to be placed in films is stuff like candy and processed cereals.
Yeah, absolutely. The sort of companies that can afford to do product placement are those companies that sell processed or fast food. And research does show us that our food choices are influenced by what we see on film and TV. But when I spoke to people involved in the product placement industry, they said that what they're doing is reflecting life, really. Children do eat crisps, they eat chocolate. If there's something wrong with that, it's really educating our youth we should be looking at, not trying to change product placement in films.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.